welcome to Taking Stock, everyone. It is October 2nd now, and it's been a pretty busy week, but I'm looking forward to having a nice conversation. This week, looking to have more of a community focus and some short-term future plans for what we're trying to do with YDRS in terms of the 501c3 application and process. So I'll be going through some items off of that listing and encouraging, you know, anyone who happens to be listening or stopping by, or if you're listening to this in post, you know, feel free to raise a hand or to send an email so that we can get more community input. That's always super, super valuable. Of course, I guess if you're listening to this months in the future, then hopefully this process has all been settled by then. But next couple of weeks, you know, if it's still October, then definitely reach out. Yeah, so when I'm talking about 501c3 application process, I'm going to start by referring back to a post that I made on the YDRS GitHub just about 2 weeks ago. And this was regarding, I'd gone through in detail the Form 1023 that any prospective public charity or private foundation needs to complete before they're going to be able to actually be recognized by the IRS. And there were a variety of different line items on there, which were simple to fill out, you know, but there were also a variety that I highlighted in the discussion, which we're going to need to have a bit more community input, I think, just to make sure folks are on the same page about what the best fit is likely to be for each one of these different line items. And my objective this week is just to run through a couple of those and ensure that that even those listening along can know exactly what the thought process was, you know, going into this application, and know that we were, you know, kind of treading carefully, taking our time, trying to measure multiple times, you know, before cutting it all, as it were, you know, before we felt comfortable going forward with the actual process. So I'll kind of just be going through in no particular order here. But again, anyone that is listening, I would love to have a conversation more in depth with any of these different things. But with that, I can just kind of hop in. One of the key items which we will need to choose when we're actually filling out the form is what's called a NTEE code. And essentially, this is a designation that any nonprofit needs to select. It stands for National Taxonomy of Exempt Entities. So essentially, it's a whole bunch of disciplines or different sectors in our society, which the IRS has recognized as, you know, worthy of having this kind of exempt status. And there's a huge range. There are hundreds of these different codes, ranging from, you know, the food sector to the, you know, social sector, finance sector, all sorts of different things. And so in my view, one of the trickiest parts is going to be selecting, you know, what the best fit sector is. And honestly, it's a bit tricky for me, as I don't think that any of them are like a slam dunk perfect, this is definitely the fit sort of fit. When reviewing the section on the IRS form, which I can link both in the Nest and also it's linked in the GitHub discussion, but when viewing its section on finance, it really has to do more with like providing public access to banking, you know, this sort of thing, where it's not quite exactly what I perceive as being, you know, YDRS's educational mission and what we're really trying to do and to provide. So I did think that perhaps some of the NTEEs which could be useful would be either under the public and societal benefit category. There's one called public finance, taxation, and monetary policy, which, again, not a perfect fit, but perhaps a bit closer. And there's also under that same category, one for financial institutions, which is extremely broad. And I thought maybe would be a decent fit as well. But I would definitely appreciate some more folks taken a look at the NTE codex and directory, and just checking to see what jumps out as perhaps a good fit, and just and letting us know, because this is something where, although we could perhaps change it in the future, if we had the ability, you know, if we were confident in the selection made at the outset, I definitely would like to be. So, yeah, I'm not sure that there's a perfect fit, but I'm sure there's a best fit, and I wanted to draw attention to that. So you'll be able to check the link for that and start reviewing as you're listening to this, or by checking out our GitHub page. Let's see. One of the other larger items that I wanted to make sure to bring up here, and this is similar where I'd love some community input for, is we, in the application, actually need to provide a brief mission statement in order to summarize in whole what our main goals are and what the processes by which we'll intend to, you know, facilitate the realization of those goals. And while that's fine, a pretty incredible limitation on this short summary, well, they want it to be short, there's a character limit of 250. That's a character limit, not a word limit. So we're talking just a few sentences here. And I can definitely provide some examples, but I'm definitely curious about a community input to try to really get this as streamlined as possible of an answer. You know, and similarly, right, this is something where I think we can try to use broader language or refer to multiple different tool sets that we might want to try to use in the future. So it's not as though we need to specifically list out, you know, A and B as possible methodologies and then only ever use A and B. But there's a fine line to draw, right, between being broad while also being specific, I suppose, to what we've accomplished so far and perhaps what we're thinking about in terms of the medium term, the long term, et cetera. So I'm definitely am interested to hear more from the community just regarding possible summaries for that. I just want to mention that John Wooten has just joined as a speaker. Hey, welcome, John, for joining for the conversation. How are you today?
Hey, Chaz, doing stellar, and really some great stellar bookkeeping items to get some consensus on here. And, you know, I think the IRS has always been sort of a big picture perspective when I speak to them, and just making sure that we have that very clear mission, which I think you very well outlined in the articles of the organization, were, you know, conveying that to them, putting forth the charity, and then codifying it under something that fits in their regime. Really just an inspirational path forward and stellar way to get the ball rolling so that we can really effectuate that impact with ideally a proper and efficient allocation of capital.
There you go, 100%. And, you know, for us to reach any destination, even on the way to that destination, we'll have to take each one of these steps and take them deliberately. And so that's why I'm so excited to kind of bring this forward and try to draw specific attention among our listener base that we definitely appreciate any input because we will be pushing forward regardless, but we want that community involvement as it's so central to the ethos of what we're trying to accomplish here for investors everywhere. So thanks so much, John, for always rallying around that, and of course for stopping by. And yeah, you make a great call out to the mission statement as outlined in our articles. I did check that the other day, and I believe it's, you know, if we were to go verbatim, it's a bit beyond the character limit that they're looking for. So we'll have to do some careful cuts, but well within our ability to do, I'm sure. And it's not like I am intending to, you know, do a live edit on this call, but I wanted to kind of draw attention to the need for this and encourage folks to supply what their vision is. And maybe we can create an amalgamation of all these different things and really try to encourage something that everyone can get behind, since this is a group mission, of course.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Chaz. I think that's one of the best parts is that it seems like everyone, or a vast, you know, a lot of people really, we are kind of on the same page on just trying to make these markets better, bring some more efficiencies to the system, and for the first, you know, bring some real transparency that is so direly needed.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the other, so just to kind of continue on here, and then John, of course, if you want to dive in deep to any one of these items, then we'll do that. But I'll just kind of run through the standouts from the GitHub discussion. There was a really interesting one asking about, you know, do you or will you attempt to influence legislation? And, you know, at the time, we had only been working on, when I was first going through this and making this post, we had just been working on hosting the ability for individuals to submit, for example, the NSCC, you know, closeout policy petition to the SCC. And here we are a couple of weeks later, and that petition has been accepted. It is being listed, you know, on their page with well over 100 individual submissions. And so it's clear that, you know, that we are in some way impacting the rules process from the SEC. And I would say that we have future plans to do so. Now, does regulation through rules and proposals with the SEC, is that count as legislation? That's perhaps one conversation. And so that's an interesting bit of you know, a word salad that I'm not exactly sure about, and I'm curious for your thoughts, John. But to be safe, you know, there's a supplemental form which we would need to submit in addition to this other broader application if there is an intention to incite change in broader legislation, and I see no reason not to submit that form as well. I was trying to see if there were any cons, you know, to incorporating that into the application, and I don't really see them. I think the IRS just wants really a heads up about the broader possible intention. Now, what do you think, John?
I agree with your sentiments, especially at the end there. Chaz, they just want to understand exactly what's happening and take it into their perspective as to whether or not to approve or disapprove. Just because that legislative lobbying and influence is such a contentious thing that would traditionally be done under a C6 as a professional organization, which doesn't have as many tax benefits because, you know, I think very, very reasonably they don't want to, you know, massively incentivize through the tax code the lobbying of what is supposed to be a democratic system. Unfortunately, it still happens, but, you know, at least it happens a little less efficiently than it could. And I don't think that we really fall under the purview of what that normally applies to, especially just because of the way SEC rules are written. It's not really like we're lobbying a member of Congress or something like that. We're just providing a public perspective and a very organized statement of what we think is best for all of our, you know, all the members, for retail, for investors, for Americans and abroad, and everyone that partakes in our most advanced, developed and liquid market for capital. So I think it's definitely a safe bet to do, and obviously to follow the ideas that they have on not directly funding political activism, which doesn't seem to be, you know, it's mostly about education. It's mostly about getting policymakers on the same page. And it's mostly about letting the best procedures that protect the fundamental objectives of the commission prevail. Then, yeah, I think we've got a great myth forward. And it ties in also to the NTEE code. I know there's definitely some around the financial institutions front. I'm not sure if I would 100% be on that side, just because, you know, it's not like we're a credit union, right? It seems more to me like an alliance and advocacy front. But I know we've had some back and forth on just finding something good on that side. I do agree with sort of how Born Luckiest has looked at it. What do you think about that, Chives? Is there any other material input so far on that code? And does that make sense on the politicking side?
Yeah, for the first part of your question, I definitely think we're on the same page as far as the politicking. That, you know, I think you're drawing at exactly the distinction that I'd want to make between, you know, encouraging investors to use their voice, to feel comfortable that they have something to say, regarding how they're treated in the market, and to use the framework which has been allotted to them by the SEC as a regulatory body, as an oversight body. And, I think that's a far cry away from, direct lobbying or, any kind of, more monetary focused relationship. It's really encouraging a independent action. And that's why, in the example of the SEC petition, I've also, written and published, we have on YDRS a page instructing exactly how to submit a petition yourself. If you had some other perception of the same petition that we were working on as a collaborative, but if you had some other idea and wanted to just submit that item yourself, this is something where in the 90-year history of the SEC online, they've got, just a scant few hundred submissions. And this is something that anyone can do. So we want to try to democratize that access. And I think that's not what the IRS is worried about. But all that being said, to cover ourselves, it may still be worth filling out this form anyway. So that's, I think we're on the same page there. And I'm curious for any other input on that from the community. And then as far as the NTEE code is concerned, yeah, I did read. I remember Born Luckiest on our Discord did share some great perspective on that. And I don't have it in front of me right now, but I know that I think we're all of like mind that there's no perfect fit. And I was saying that just a little while ago. And essentially, I think we'll just need to try to pick the thing which provides for the widest umbrella. Unfortunately, as you said, those under the financial designation are really more about providing service that might be difficult to access otherwise, like loan services, credit services, credit union services, et cetera, that we don't really have any perspective or intention to be providing. That's not what we've been discussing this whole time. So that's definitely still an open question. I don't know. I mean, I just would love more input, I suppose, as I've been rallying for, and I'll definitely be looking to encourage individuals to ring in, but we can't sit on laurels forever. So we'll find, if there's an 80% fit and that seems like the best one, that's what we'll go with.
Well, love that, Chives. And so completely with you. Certainly the biggest differentiator here that makes me agree with what you're suggesting on, let's do the filing just to be safe and to, foster transparency and disclosure. But yeah, the biggest thing is that normally these lobbying efforts are done, like you said, for that monetary incentive for some kind of industry participant. And that's why it is subject to, not being tax deductible and such, because it serves a real private interest. And it seems from my perspective very clear that that's really not the objective here. And as you said, with making sure that everyone voices their own specific opinion and not, some uniform idea from one person, and make sure we really get just the best policy out of it for everyone to further, those investor protections, the capital formation, and ensuring that at the end of the day, the SEC can effectively first foster its goal of really making sure we have just the most efficient market. Seems like it would really be just fine on that front. And for the codes, it's certainly something that could change in a annual filing when we do the report to them, if it ever had to. But it from my perspective, it didn't seem like something that would be really a game breaker on just as long as you have the right ethos behind the mission, which you've so clearly conveyed, Chives.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, if there's a sound argument that can be made, which is part of what that 250 character mission statement is going to entail, I'm sure we could wrap in whatever NTEE code is selected, spend 15 or 20 of our characters on that potentially. Well, we'll have to consider it. That's a decent percentage. But I'm right there with you. It's about being able to make a decent case for what is being worked on. And I'm not really concerned about the actual efficacy of the of the case to be made. So, I think that it's a great mission, and I think that once understood, I think that anyone is going to be getting on board. So it's just a matter of crossing the T's and dotting those I's properly. So I will. Oh, and we have Fidel requesting to come up. So I'll add you on there so that we can, and then we'll continue on as well. So that's terrific.
Come on, party people.
Hey there. Yeah, we're just going through the, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen before joining, but just going through some of the items off the 501c3 filing, discussing some of the details and, you know, still gray areas so that we can make sure we're looking great with the IRS.
Nice. This is Warren, by the way, from the Bastards.
Oh, yeah. How's it going, Warren?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How about yourself?
Yeah, we're doing great. So feel free to join in on the conversation as you're here, but we'll just carry on with the line items and definitely glad to see you, man.
You too.
So the next item I was going to cover here is there's a couple questions that kind of run together. Here's the first, so I'll just kind of run through these and then we can chat about it. You know, do you or will you pay compensation to any of your officers, directors, or trustees? And I'll say my indication is to answer no. Then there's, do you or will you donate funds or pay expenses for individuals? And I think that's a trickier one. I kind of lump it into the same category because we're talking about using, you know, funds collected by the entity to provide for individuals, whether or not that's, you know, individuals who are performing tasks on the day to day and there's some consensus that they should be drawing some kind of salary, or individuals that are doing travel or other advocacy in some way. And if they should have, you know, itemized moment-to-moment compensation for some of these things, for example, if there's a conference regarding custody or regarding finance, and we have a representative there that is, you know, directly associated with YDRS, would we want to allow for entity funds to get that person a plane ticket, get that person a hotel, et cetera. And I'll tell you, I'm honestly of mixed minds about this. I certainly think it's valuable to be able to support individuals that are, you know, going out and doing these things. I'd be happy to go out and do those things. And certainly being supported in that way by an entity would make it easier. But my concerns are, you know, that I want to make sure that there is adequate transparency, that there's adequate, you know, community input about which events and which representatives and how those things will work. And I'm wondering if, you know, the barrier of trying to create a community input, you know, structure where it's reasonable and feasible to get input on those things without slowing down the other stuff that we're working on. So that's some of the concerns that I have. So John, what do you think about that? And of course, Warren, you chime in as well, if you like.
Well, Chais, I think one of our very unique opportunities here as the first American Donna is figuring out how to allocate a central pool of capital with a decentralized decision-making and governance process. What do you mean when you say that at that last part, when you talk about how it can...
Yeah, like I was talking about how it might slow down other efforts.
Yes. What do you mean by that? Because that seems like it ties right into the governance side.
I completely agree with you that it does. And naturally, as the first American Donna, we're absolutely well positioned. Like that's the kind of solution, right? A crypto blockchain, the kind of DAO based solution to determine consensus about these different things. But I guess my feeling was, how do we determine what is a good conference? You know, how do we determine who is a good person to send there? It seemed to me awfully subjective, which is fine. I'd be curious to see how the democratic process kind of works from a government's perspective, but these are things that we're going to want to plan. You know, make reservations months and months ahead of time, right? Like once we have this set, ideally would be able to get things settled quickly. I think then, I guess we end up talking about, you know, introducing hard limits to discussion around proposals, you know, forcing votes at certain times, like 6 months out or whatever the ticketeering, you know, standards are for that conference. Those are some of the, that's kind of where I'm thinking about as far as that is concerned. I think broadly, I'll say this, I think broadly, I would imagine that a lot of community members would be open to the idea of some portion of donated funds going to support someone like, you know, for example, yourself, John, or myself, to go out and talk about custody at some, you know, at some place. But I mean, I'd also just be happy to do that anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not that I need, it's not like I don't think that I would need the community's help to do that. But I certainly would appreciate, you know, having the cohesion that organizing it through the organization represents. So I hope that kind of shines more of a light on where my head is with that.
So I put a link up there about the North American Securities Administrators Association, and I don't know if the YDRS DAO could also be an extension of a voice of state and provisional securities regulators. So if we in the future are able to kind of merge some of the educational resources with also different regulatory frameworks that coincide with DRS, and how could we integrate that with existing TradFi, as well as, I wonder, like, okay, I feel like this could be a great project with MOAS, where we could actually build independent, not, it wouldn't be advisory, but it'd be just general regulatory guardrails that basically we could, hopefully these could be like wide-ranging audits that FINRA would also have to, like stuff that FINRA would do, but this would be like, just like this regulatory organization would also be able to kind of be on the panel of these other, like, you know, these, you know, like in that tweet was the fall meeting for the securitization regulators. But I'm just saying, like, when are we going to get a seat on the table, right? And I believe with MOAS, and, you know, we hire a bunch of lawyers, and, you know, then we can, you know, just how can we be an autonomous, how can we have the most exposure as an independent household investor led organization, but also have other centralized entities be beholden to the people, right? Similar to how this organization is doing, I guess.
Well, I think you're driving at some really important questions there. And I guess I just want to, the first item that I'd want to respond to kind of in broad is that, you know, it's so important that we take the steps we're taking today and do what we can today, because they're, you know, the future is uncertain, right? But every moment that we can improve the reach and power of traditional retail investors, then eventually they will have no choice. And when I say they, I mean the, you know, traditional finance market incumbents, they will have no choice but to provide retail investors a seat at the table to discuss. And through doing things like bringing more people into the fold with education, using the resources of the SEC to bring on more items for public petition and comment, that brings them to heel and will force them to respect the power, the latent power, which has existed in retail but has gone unnoticed or unutilized over the last several decades. And that's what we're definitely trying to accomplish with some of the conversations that we're having here. Certainly, if there were, you know, if we had many millions of dollars and could hire on lawyers to help facilitate some of the language and navigate these different things, maybe that would be helpful. But there's no way to know when or if we'll have those kinds of resources. So I think, you know, that's kind of how I'd respond to most of what you brought up, Warren. But the last thing that you mentioned, you know, how can we get a seat at the table? My perspective, to be honest, is to continue doing what we're doing. I view this as an unstoppable force, and it's a matter of getting from A to B on this one, and determining the proper structure so that we can, you know, can go through and navigate the IRS's approval process, just like we've already done to become a DUNA, and just like we're doing to continue to grow a transparent community. You know, that's going to be what we need to continue on the path of. And it's, you know, it's conversations like this one that make that happen. So I hope that helps kind of frame where we're coming from and what kind of mentality we have right now.
So I am very confident that we have 500,000 to 2, 3, 4, 5 million GameStop investors around the world. And I would bet that I would have a very high confidence that many of them are on a fucking warpath and would crowdfund their services. And I know there are plenty of lawyers that are GameStop shareholders as well as household shareholders in self-custody through direct registration. So maybe we can just not flood different subreddits or different platforms, but maybe, I don't know if you guys are cool with it, just be like, hey, how can we anonymously kind of build, you know, like, you know how instead of having millions of dollars to file this paperwork with lawyers, how can all these GameStop shareholders do that for themselves? Sorry, for us collectively, but still keep, like, you know, for them to still able to do it. Just basically everyone kind of agrees on, like, what we're going to do, right, to build whatever frameworks or, you know, like you said, tribes.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I would absolutely encourage anyone who is familiar with this effort to stop by any of our social channels. We absolutely have been operating as a volunteer consortium for years now, and you know, will essentially continue to do so. That's part of, to wrap back around to my questions, you know, like, I'm against, at least personally, like, I have no interest in drawing any kind of salary from this nonprofit. And in fact, I want to go above and beyond when it comes to financial disclosure. I intend to, you know, my preference would be to release far more about the distribution of funds than is required by the IRS, because I want for people to feel confident that if they choose to support this effort, then, you know, they know not only can they be directly involved in how things are being used and distributed, but they know very well that that it was mission first. And although that can make it difficult sometimes, you know, because all of our contributors are volunteers, and because the economy is what it is and people are having a difficult time all over the world, that can make it difficult to find knowledgeable, consistent help. But that has not stopped us from reaching this point and will not stop us from reaching further points. And so to your credit, yeah, Warren, anyone certainly that you know or any community that you're familiar with, if you perceive that there would be an interest in what we're working on, and you know, people can get involved. They don't have to join any of the social media channels. They can hop on GitHub, which is itself an open source platform, and supply ideas, supply, you know, code suggestions, help with any writing for articles or future proposals, submit data to the database. There are tons of ways that we encourage anyone who's interested to join in and to help strengthen this effort, because it is a community effort through and through.
Hey, I gotta go, guys. Phone's on 9%.
Oh, no.
But hey, y'all have a great day. Thanks for having me up.
Thank you. Well, sure.
Thank you for stopping by. Yeah.
Chives, unless you had more to expand on that.
No, please, John. Go ahead.
I'll further Fidel's sentiments. And I love what you're saying, Chives, and I'm with you. Okay, I mean, I'm gonna be here doing the same thing no matter what happens. I'll figure out a way to pay rent one way or another. And I completely agree that it doesn't have to be money from anything on this. It can, I'm in the same boat as you, but as I said in that thread, you know, people get burnt out and the founders very often of nonprofits don't want to get paid. They feel guilty about getting paid. But fair work deserves fair compensation. And especially as you mentioned with the economic climate that we're in, we've gotten as far as we've have, which is incredible and due quite largely to massive efforts from yourself and so many other contributors that I could not do them justice trying to name everyone. And that's on this very lackadaisical, I mean, not to put it down, but it's all very part-time here and there as much as people can find the time to do. You agree on that point, Chives?
Of course. I think that's very fair to say.
And look, I've seen for years now working on an open source blockchain that has the sole objective founding vision of making an equitable financial system and all these very inspirational humanitarian goals. And anybody, like you say, can go on the GitHub at any point in time and start learning about it, working on it and making improvements. But Chives, nobody does because it's a small number of people that have the innate internal driving fire in their gut to just make the world better and to do these things that need to happen no matter what, just because it's just the right thing to do. And for if you have that, it's incredible. But you know, not everyone has what you have, Chaps. Not everyone has the undying vision and understanding that this is such an obvious one way path, like you said, that needs to happen, will happen, and you know, it's really our job to scope it to function for the best for the future of investing.
Well, I appreciate the kind compliments buried in there, but I don't disagree with you that, you know, yes, that passion is does not always materialize in action in the same way for each different person, but that's also just because we're talking about a complicated subject that itself requires a lot of time to understand. You know, there's a sunk cost just to perceive this issue before we can even begin talking about the efforts that go into trying to facilitate a solution. And that's, you know, a big part why I think the effort is on education. Why my perception has always been that the effort needs to be on education is because that will, you know, I've said many times, you know, people know they're being screwed, but they don't know how. And that's, you know, to me, that's it kind of comes back to that. If people better understood, you know, that their pensions are being abused because they don't truly have custody or their, you know, any retirement vehicle or, you know, that they're not receiving any kind of tax advantage on their dividends when they're holding through a broker, you know, these sorts of things people will get upset about. But getting the information out there is the tricky part. I mean, I'm not sure, I guess, John, you know, what I'll say is this, I guess, if there was some overwhelming vote going, you know, forcing compensation, then like, I mean, that's one thing, but I don't. So are you thinking that we need to answer yes to this because we may want to do it in the future? This a question about do you or will you pay compensation to any of your officers, directors, or trustees?
Specifically on 6, that one's sort of nuanced just because of it being a done of, they're not really being, you know, everyone's kind of being on the same playing field, not really being officers, directors, or trustees. So right, certainly right. I circle back on that. But it's more the driving ethos here that I just want to make sure that either we can have a conversation on, or we are on the same page on it, or we can, you know, figure out exactly what page you want to be on here. Because, you know, there's no right answer. Obviously, it's what everyone wants. But my point here is that, you know, people that work at nonprofits, they, you know, everyone at the Gates Foundation gets paid to go and save lives every day. People get paid to go and dig wells to save lives every day. These very humanitarian causes still require at least some form of compensation to, you know, the people out there every day digging the trenches, so to speak, putting in the hours. And like was suggested by Fidel, we have so many experts in this field that have the skills to do incredible work. But the question for me is, if we can accumulate a centralized pool of capital from these millions of investors, and you know, if it's our prerogative and opportunity to give those funds to people like Fidel, to people like Jane, to people like Bob, that go out there, do the work every day, and, you know, also have to work this other job to support themselves and to put a roof over their head, you know, is it a good idea, if we can accumulate the capital, to provide these monetary incentives? So that, like, when the conversation on this started in Discord, we had one particular member who got laid off. Is it an idea? Is it a good idea to have this as an option for people that do go through that process to learn, to understand, and to care about these very material problems in the market? Should they have an avenue to go and pursue this on a full-time basis? The question becomes, for me, I wake up every morning and I see mountains and mountains of things to do that I just want to voraciously jump into. And there is so much on the table that I could never get it done if I had 100 hours in the day. And to think that we are kneecapping some of our members without any of the financial incentives requisite for basic subsistence in today's life, and that we might have a chance here to provide that basic, not even incentive, they already have the incentive, but just the sustenance that's required, you know, and to give them that reward that can let them lean in to the work as something, if they want to focus on it, if they have the agenda to focus on it, and that they can see quite clearly the material work items right in front of them if they only had the time to do it. That's the conundrum I've seen in these open source projects for years, is that everyone loves the mission, but it's just hard to find that sustainability.
Yeah, I think your passion is really on clear display there. And I so much appreciate what you're saying. I think you're making an incredible point. And I'm with you. I think for me, as long as there are individuals, you know, that, and there clearly are, I mean, I can tell you, and you know this as well, but just to say, like, the volunteers that we have, the individuals that already have shown, you know, despite the broader economic reality, despite, you know, the trappings of daily work, if they are lucky to have it, or, you know, family or other personal commitment, that still spend time to further resources, to further research, and continue to grow what we have here. It's impossible to thank those people enough. And if it were, you know, something that was agreeable to the community at large, you know, there are definitely a handful of folks that I think have proven that they have the drive through their, you know, through their diligence in contributing, even when it is this undue requirement on them of all this extra time with no direct reward. That's what, you know, as you mentioned, like I think of James Alphonse, who is absolutely incredible contributor. We'll plan to have him on as a guest in one of the coming weeks, in fact. So look out for that. But it's a really incredible person who I think is, you know, would be a great candidate for something like that. I guess for me, and it'll be ultimately up to the community, but I would want to see, you know, a history of involvement that was not based around monetary reward first, you know, like we've talked a bit about, you know, bounty rewards to help to influence future development or distribution, things like that. That's a bit more accessible. But ultimately these will be things to discuss as a community. And I'll be honest, it did not cross my mind. You know, when we look at number seven here, you know, will we donate funds to or pay expenses for individuals? It's a great thought that, you know, that expense could just as easily be a contracting fee for an individual that is doing research, that is building something, that is, you know, helping to write a really strong legal proposal or who is digging into some of these, you know, 800-page opinions from 3 decades ago, right? Like, these seriously. Are things that, you know, we are fortunate enough to have a handful of members that do that by choice. You know, I'll sit down with a cup of coffee and dig into one of those things, but not more often than once every couple of weeks. You know, I need a cool down period.
Man, it's good stuff.
There's nothing quite like it. I'll definitely say that. And if, you know, it is absolutely like work. This is selfless work. This is work for a grander cause, but it is work. So I appreciate very much what you're saying there, John. And it seems to me like the way that these questions are phrased with the IRS, you know, do you or will you, at the very least, it seems, you know, similar to the some of the other sentiments expressed earlier, it may be just simply well worth indicating that, you know, that we may, to keep those options open so that if we do in the future have are able to facilitate a transition for some community members so that they become, you know, full-fledged contributors and are, you know, being supported by the community and everyone involved in that transaction is feeling that they are, you know, getting the valuable side of the transaction. Well, that would be a really terrific thing. And I think that's where, if that could happen, then you're crossing over into something that's going to be not only more sustainable, but something which will grow much faster as well, I have to imagine, because you're talking about increasing the dedicated man hours towards furthering the project.
Yeah.
So all that to say, yeah, great, great stuff there, John. I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I feel sheepish that I didn't see that before you brought it up. I really appreciate, you know, that you explained it that way.
Of course.
But hey, that's what growth is all about.
I mean, the faster we can iterate, you know, the quicker we can get developments through the door.
Right. Exactly. So there's one here on 8. You know, do you or will you conduct activities or provide grants or assistance to individuals or organizations outside the United States? And when I'd written this this commentary, I'd said that we could answer no, that we would focus on the United States. But rereading the question, I'm realizing it's talking about, conducting with individuals outside the states. And we absolutely do have community members who are not living in the United States, but are U.S. investors. So I'm realizing in the context of this conversation, we'll actually probably need to say yes to this as well, since we do have team members and volunteers that have put in incredible amounts of time to furthering, you know, for example, I think of, you know, we have one non-US contributor to the YDRS database who's put in dozens and dozens and dozens of hours, but, you know, never stepped foot on American soil. And that's someone who I'd love to recognize for their work in that way. What do you think, John? Is my reread of this accurate?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a crucial item, especially given the preeminence of American securities markets, just as part of global portfolio construction. And to get the policy right in America, in my view, you know, the SEC policy is really the policy that most foreign governments and jurisdictions follow. So if we can get it right here, we can get it right anywhere. And it becomes just that much easier to have our efforts further globally to protect all investors. And as you've said, we have, I mean, and if we agree on that front, then should we have individuals? Do we have individuals? And are these individuals tremendous stellar contributors to the organization? 100%. And to think that I think we have something really unique. We were talking earlier about the unique structure. I mean, this is, I think, one of the first times in history where you can trace back the majority of our conversations to podcasts like this, recorded DAO meetings, or written referenceable textual exchanges in a public or, you know, semi-public form. And, you know, that's something that's never really happened before. And it allows for anybody, anywhere, to join in at any time. Now that everything's public on GitHub, it's without even asking permission. And, you know, if ideas and opportunities are borderless, well, then, you know, why can't consideration be as well?
Yeah, well said. Absolutely. And especially in context of, I think, this broader conversation about trying to encourage the positive feedback loop of community development, and with the knowledge that we do have a variety of individuals, I mean, incredible contributors. I mean, look, Bibic too, just to name another. So much of the DRS guides that, you know, that were some of the foundational parts of our history, you know, and he's from the UK. Just another person who got involved with the US markets following the, you know, with all this kerfuffle of the last couple of years, and is interested in seeing a major change. So I think that sounds good. I mean, we'll have to, if ever asked, you know, we can explain some of the nuance here. I think they're like yes, no checkboxes on the form. So we'll cross those bridges as we come to it and be prepared to do so. So here's an interesting one that I was ahead of doing this call. Well, there's number 10 here. I guess I'm going to skip that one for now, just because I'm curious, just on the, since I think it's more related to this idea of crypto and online governance. There's one, I have 11. Do you or will you operate bingo or other gaming activities? And initially I thought pretty straightforwardly about this, that it would not be relevant, but I wonder, you know, there may be potential that we would try to set up something, you know, gamify some participation element on chain. And if that were done, you know, with some kind of weighted distribution based on participation, I mean, some could even, by some definitions, even like a bounty board is like a game. So I'm wondering, John, what your thoughts are on that. Is the IRS getting as nuanced as that, or are they thinking about like a Call of Duty tournament?
So as someone who's read just thousands of pages of the tax code, whenever they say gaming, it's really more gambling business. So like bingos, charities is like a common thing for old folks' homes, and it definitely seems like that's sort of more what they're looking at here. Something like a bounty board, and the bounties are an interesting topic, and it dives into that question you had of like initial monetary incentive versus connection with the purpose and maybe a more sustainable passion about the underlying mission. I think you mentioned Bibic, and it's just a stellar example of someone that has put in so much work to make clear something that before YDRS was inexplicably challenging to understand, which is all these different brokers processes for DRS. And someone now, you know, having had that experience in life and moving on to that next step, starting a family, could flawlessly be just an example of someone that could use some support if we want to promote and sustain that kind of crucial effort into what we're working on, just because of the needs of, you know, day-to-day life. And I don't think that's gambling. I don't think that's bingo. I think that's just honest and true compensation, fair compensation for fair work to individuals, to the members of the community.
Yeah, I appreciate your expanding on that. Yeah, I wondered if they perhaps just meant gambling. Yeah, certainly fair compensation for fair work is not going to fall under that category with you there. And I'm sure that we could argue as such if ever necessary. So we'll just have to keep in mind that we can't ever use a random number generator to spit out, like, yeah, we'll have to come up with a different solution if a proposal is tied yes or no.
I think it's more for like explicitly, you know, like gambling. I don't know if it applies to governance, but I could look into it.
Well, good to be sure, but sounds like, okay, so we can safely answer no on that. That's good. It would seem. So it's asked, there's also one here asking about unrelated business gross income, if we'd have 1,000 or more. And I think there's, so I don't expect that this would come up, as, you know, we could, if we were offering services or products, then When those are sold, is it like a? In my mind, you could structure it such that, let's say, there's a donation of $25, and if you donate that, then you get a T-shirt or whatever. Is that the same thing as income? Now, I'm no tax code expert, John. You're probably more versed. Am I correct in thinking that that would be distinctly different?
Yeah. So it's certainly an option. And I love these ideas you have. You've got the T-shirt ideas. You've got the what was that last idea? Doing a tiebreaker with an RNG.
Well, that was I was not serious about that.
Okay. Well, to answer your question, Chives, yeah. So if they get something that you have to record the monetary value of it. And anything that's of material worth, you have to give them a receipt for it, and you have to deduct the value of whatever that thing that you give them is. As I understand it right now, we just sort of have that online store that sells branded merchandise at zero profit margin.
That's correct, yes. And that store operates on a print on demand. So unfortunately, it's at a high cost per item because they're printing it individually each time something is ordered. You know, something that I'd like to do in the future perhaps is, you know, if we had the ability to say get 100 shirts printed, bring that cost down, then we could, you know, more easily provide them at a, you know, lower donation incentive price for you know, for the individuals who are interested. But that's all down the line stuff. Yeah, as you said, right now there's a print on demand store with a 0% profit margin. So things are as cheap as possible, and that can be easily verified on the page of the store itself. Yeah.
Well, as long as we're doing that more so, and other services certainly up in the air, but you know, the objective here, as you probably know, is really just to keep most of it through donations. So you know, if they're being sold at cost, or you know, just so that people can have them, and it's not, you know, trying to generate income or trying to sell subscriptions or trying to make a ton of profit off it, then, you know, you're pretty much solid.
Yeah, at that cost would be my goal, at least. Absolutely. Bringing that at cost down would also be nice.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Maybe I got to look into getting a t-shirt printer here at the apartment. I wonder how much those go for. So it sounds like we can absolutely structure it such that we're not going to be needing to worry about doing something like this. And I definitely perceive that's going to be better, not only like from a accounting perspective, but from an optics perspective. I think it's important to proactively operate in such a way that we have that, you know, predominant ongoing nonprofit focus.
Yeah, I mean, by all means, if anyone wants to follow up in Discord later or something, you know, but I don't see it as like we have anything to really sell people, so to speak. It's kind of more just on that educational front.
Yeah, well, one idea that I've had in the past was trying to offer, and I've mentioned this, I think, in past episodes, but I liked the idea of trying to offer almost like a consulting educational meeting for issuers so that they could become more familiar with the delineations of custody and how the different parts of the system work. But that's not something that we would need to charge for. We could just offer reservations.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good idea, Chives. And it also sounds like it would be directly related to the missions anyway.
Yes, I would say so. So moving on here, there's a question about if we would be providing disaster relief. I think that it'd be better just to say no and to avoid that. Of course, it's very unfortunate if we do have a volunteer contributor or community member that was in a disaster area. Certainly that's in the news right now for a variety of reasons, but I think it would be cleaner to try to keep, if we were doing those kinds of individual compensations, that they were related more individually to project contributions and furthering that sort of effort. What do you think there, John?
Yeah, that's just it's affected a lot of people I know, and it's unfortunate, but it's definitely a very broad scope that would take us to operating, I think, a much larger vision than is needed on the self-custody side.
Yeah.
Unless we can call the DTCC a natural disaster.
Ho! Yeah, I was about to make the same joke. Like, was 2008 a disaster?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that there's an interesting argument to be made in there, but I think that that we probably don't need to try to argue that case specifically. definitely some good humor though. Okay, so one more softball, and then there's a hardball, and then we can wrap up. This next one, 13. You know, we must identify as least one of these, you know, regions. There's charitable, religious, educational, scientific, literary, etc. And of these, you know, educational is really the only one that says to me that's really where we would be. I think there's no argument to be had there. So I'm just mentioning it for completeness. What do you think, John?
With you there, Chives.
Okay. So then the last one, and I was just doing a bunch of reading about this before starting the show. It asks that we must qualify, you know, if we want to try to qualify for a public charity status, or if we're going to be filing as a public foundation, as a private foundation. So I've done some research on this, and Jana, before I dive into what I had learned, have you done some reading on this yourself?
Yeah, so by all means, lead the way, Chives. This is what I was talking about earlier with the C6 designation. It's more of a private interest without those tax benefits.
Yeah, so I guess to broadly, what I'd read was that, you know, when they are receiving 501c3 applications, private foundation is viewed as kind of the default. And it's only if you additionally qualify through a series of like specific organizational metrics that you would be operating as a public charity instead. And as far as, you know, key differences go, you know, a private foundation is essentially like a more flexible, more privately controlled entity. And a public charity, conversely, has more of a public input and a larger board of directors that has more information about them publicly accessible. The public charities have one large benefit, which they have a higher donor tax deductibility, so that they're likely to be able to solicit more public donation. And crucially, another one of the requirements is that public charities have to receive, I believe, one third at least of their funds through broad public donation, rather than through like small private large contributions. And the private foundation has no such requirement like that. Those were kind of the largest differences. So I guess just to kind of sum, you know, there's a difference in the amount of public funding, which can be encouraged and which is required. And there's a difference in, from a government's leadership perspective, the publishing, the transparency, the diversity of the leadership group. And one thing that was difficult for me to wrap my head around, John, so I'm curious if you can help to shine some light on this as well, in addition to the items I brought up, is how that wraps in with the DUNA governance structure. You know, like if we're to say that the, and it seems simple to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'll let you hop on in a second here, but regardless of which of these statuses that we were trying to move forward with, the respective board or leadership structure would be able to, in writing, defer much of that decision-making power to the DUNA and to the underlying community consensus. That was the takeaway that I settled on. So what's your perspective on all this, John?
Yeah, I think you certainly hit on what I would see as the biggest ethos differentiator, which is that one-third threshold on the large versus a more crowdsourced donation base. And this is something I've been thinking about quite a bit, just because one of the big pillars of the syndicate was this idea that you could sort of have the excess margins that you charge over cost, just because the way it's set up is cost plus, just because I think that's the way that natural public utilities should operate. Setting it up so that some of those margin percentages get pushed on over to into the DUNA, and having that explicitly come from the syndicate. But it certainly seems like there are a whole heck of a lot more benefits, especially on the deductibility and marketability and the transparency oversight guidelines for the public charity side. And I think certainly we're going to, you know, everyone's going to push forward on that transparency side, no matter what we go with. But I do appreciate more that the lower bars that the public charity sets and the way that it really forces us to take a more decentralized approach to fostering donations. And instead of it coming from a select few individuals, which could, you know, it's subject to the whims of a few, instead, you know, as Fidel posited, you know, making it something that it really is more for the people, by the people. It is built on the foundation of distributed contributions, perspectives, and oversight. And instead of, you know, a select few entry participants, it's everyone that really has that end benefit of, you know, the very important work that we're doing can contribute back to it and fuel that fire and continue that growth. That for me really pushes us. I think public charity is like demonstrably it's sort of the superior case from the tax and legal perspective. And definitely from the oversight perspective and making sure that things don't get corrupted. Everything stays in the hands of the DAO members and particularly that you can distribute that power to everyone and while also holding those transparent ongoing meetings and making sure that everybody's involved and integrating directly with that blockchain voting process. Does that make sense, Chives? I think really the potential here is to just foster more involvement with the public charity side and to use the additional benefits that come with that classification as just a stronger supporter of our mission and making it even a more efficient org structure. It seems, you know, from my perspective, I think it's really the way that best aligns the interests with all, you know, investors at large and all our members rather than, you know, any possibility that it could promote a select few interests.
Yeah, I really appreciate your expanding on that. And I think we're coming from the exact same place on this one. You know, it absolutely seems realistic to me, considering that, you know, we already have a diverse community. We've had, I don't see any difficulty with meeting the minimum standards to be able to file as the public charity as opposed to a private foundation. And then naturally these other benefits, you know, being able to just have more accessible donations, more enticing donations, and more transparency. I think, you know, from what I was reading, right, I mean, even the private foundations, they still have transparency guidelines. They still are operating, you know, in a nonprofit framework, but a public charity is just going to have, just on like a first glance, you know, perspective, I think it's well worth the additional scrutiny, which we would be inviting anyway, to be able to call ourselves, you know, a public charity and to really strike at that chord with those who are curious about, you know, what we're doing and what kind of resources that we are seeking to offer. So I'm definitely interested there. Now I was curious, John, do you have any insight about the reflection? You know, a public charity, from what I read, needs to have a diversified board of directors. And how does that board of directors relate in terms of a decision-making process to the Duna diversified community. That's one thing that, I mean, it's probably because Duna legislation is brand new, right? That I cannot find clear insight on that. So is this something where we're going to need to, in some methodology, pave a new trail as the first operating, you know, first filed, at least, American Duna?
I'm with you there, Chais. It will certainly be one of the first instances where we're going to have that public filing with a nonprofit that is not based on an explicit board of directors. And this is really, and it ties sort of directly into the token distribution and making sure that everything is explicitly fair in that perspective. Most of the board requirements specifically that I've seen, they come from the state level. So it shouldn't come too much into play on the application process, and we should be good, in my view, to push through on that front. And then obviously it will be good in Wyoming, just because they built the framework, so they understand exactly how that's going to work. And that's why in item six I was objecting a little bit to some of these more legacy legal titles that you would have in a more hierarchical structure, because obviously those won't exist when we're all on the same playing field and it is governed by smart contracts, so to speak. Does that make sense, Charles?
Yeah, that's a really excellent thing to highlight too, that although this is a broad application at the government agency, that there's going to be more state-by-state guidelines. And it's reasonable to expect that Wyoming is going to be more prepared to deal with some of these nuances, considering they're the only state with this kind of entity type on the books. So yeah, that's good thinking. And I suppose we'll have to, as questions arise, if we're working with legislators in Wyoming, then we'll have to, these questions are out enough to answer it. I'm sure that to some degree, they've already anticipated these questions and probably already have some kind of framework in place. Let's hope at least that's what has happened.
Yeah, the state commissioner's offices are usually really helpful. So just a quick call or email back and forth from them it's pretty trivial to clarify some of these things.
Yeah, great. Well, I'll certainly be reaching out then. That's an excellent thought. I can update everyone on it next week.
Nice.
Oh, well, excellent. I mean, I think we covered a ton of great ground here. Those are, again, folks can check out the discussion, can certainly leave things on that GitHub page if they want to, or join any of the socials. We definitely will want to reach some kind of community consensus, of course, with the more voices, the better, and be able to push forward on some of these items. The sooner the better, in my mind. But of course, that needs to be balanced with community input and democracy. John, is there any other pressing items that you think would be worth covering?
Well, Chais, I think, as we said, we really have a unique opportunity here to be the first in an industry dominated by such massive incumbent interests to bring that power back to the members, back to the people themselves, and back to, the end investors that markets are meant to serve. On a call last week with a couple SEC staffers, you know how they do calls with people related to rules. When you comment, they'll have meetings based on the publications, and in an idea of fostering this transparency and community involvement, and making sure that everything's on the same page, so that it's not a couple of private interests, policy trying to lobby for a specific outcome, but really just trying to get the best solution, which is obviously what we're incorporating into the supplemental filing on political efforts. I just asked them to record the meeting so that it could be shared with the community and everyone could understand exactly what's happening in real time, which is, I think, one of the big ethos of open source development, that you can see exactly what where developments happen, what the inspirations are. You can really understand the thought process and actively participate and comment on the changes to build that best product with all the viewpoints of everyone that has a stake at the table. And when I asked them about recording the meeting, they told me that they didn't know if they had a policy on recording calls in general. And verbatim, it was, nobody has ever asked that before, end verbatim. And so I think we definitely have a real opportunity. It's one of the first in the sector that are fighting for Main Street, fighting for transparency, and fighting for efficiency, rather than trying to preserve those rents.
I wonder, John, if you happen to live in a single-party consent recording state.
Oh, you know, good question. I don't know this, that's really beyond my head. They said don't do it. I said okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to get you in trouble with our multi-tenant factors, but that it number one, it is appalling to hear that nobody's ever thought to ask, or I guess reading into the subtext that none of the people invested in organizing and participating in those meetings or any of the interns thought that for posterity that could be helpful. I mean, what, do they not take down a transcription, or do they have a scribe there? I wonder how that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no transcription. I think it's just a blasphemy and a laughable throwing away the textbook on transparency when you have meetings related to rule changes with CEOs of major brokerages, and you get a 2-sentence summary of the legal jargon that was discussed and absolutely no insights into any of the proceedings. And, you know, if people want to stay private, that's fine, but you should certainly be able to elect to have transparency for discussions like that. And it doesn't serve anyone to need to wait, you know, years for a proposed rule change to come out that might very sparingly reference a conversation in a footnote versus being able to, in real time, see what the conversation looks like and understand what the policymaker's thought process is, so that you can best help them in understanding the viewpoints of Main Street.
Yeah, I think that really is crucial, not only in the technological landscape of today, but just in the context of these magnates, which operate systems that are used by millions every day. I think that there's a clear responsibility, not only of them, but of the regulators to ensure access to clear information about how those conversations go and what the priorities, what the, you know, the mentalities are of these movers and shakers within the space. Now, of course, that's going to be an uphill battle. You know, people are used to the cigar-filled back room. I guess now it's people just need to fill their own living rooms with cigar smoke when they meet on Zoom. But either way, I think moving towards greater transparency expectations is something that we really need to do. I mean, I like to sometimes frame it in the broader custodial mindset. You know, we're talking about taking custody of our information, of our you know, influence in these spaces. You know, these guys have responsibility, and we are, you know, downstream of that responsibility. You want to be drinking water that's getting pollutants put into it 2 miles upstream, and because there was no required public filing? Come on now.
Oh gosh.
So I think with that though, it's only further examples that, you know, we have this kind of framework and perspective, and that's going to carry through alongside the community in the other efforts that we're continuing to develop. So I'm glad that you were able to stop by kind of to talk through some of these things, John. I really always appreciate your making this time available. I love speaking with you. And thanks to, we have several live listeners here. Certainly, if any of you guys have anything that you'd like to bring up, any follow-up questions on any of the discussion items off the nonprofit application or anything else, you know, I'll just give it a minute here in case anyone wants to hop on up. And otherwise, we can wrap up. How are you feeling, John?
Stellar. With you there, Chives. Thank you for spearheading the efforts here on setting up the pay.gov account and really putting in the detailed, nuanced analysis on these crucial application questions for really formalizing everything here with the IRS. It's tremendous work, Chives.
Well, I'm glad to do it. It brings me joy to do. And, you know, but all that being said, you know, that's just one perspective. My research may lead me to a different conclusion than someone else's research. And that's why I love being able to speak with you and other community members about it.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like everyone's mic shy right now. I'm just teasing. Thanks, everyone, for stopping by, of course. And if you think of a follow-up question later, you can definitely reach out to us on any of these social medias, over at ydrs.org, by email. And we'll see you all again next week. Have a great one, everybody.